games are art, and like all art, they are all what you make of it. They're unique from all other applications of art because you are a primary part of it. Alongside Video Games Live, Play, and plenty more productions, the BBC is getting into the game of orchestral presentations of select music pieces, and I am pumped to see this. This is One Art Jumping Mediums and Culture Story. Now it's time for your hosts, Rob Roberts, Jamie Summers, and Loki to tell you more about this headline and the rest of the week's gaming news, starting right now on the show, where every gamer has a voice.
Hello, my friends out there on the internet. Welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio, and we are live once again with episode number 912 for our show for May the 1st. It is May 2022. I am Rob Roberts, and joining me, as he does every week, say hello to Techmaster Loki. Hi, Loki.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm doing better.
Good, good. I was going to ask. You were out last week because you had your surgery, so you're here. You're looking normal. You're upbeat. So good. We were all hoping it would go this way, where you're going to just go right back into doing the show and all that stuff. But everything's going well.
Yeah, it's going well.
Good.
I took a week. Well, actually, I have a few more days off still because they're finishing up the last piece of, I guess, the recovery where they have to take out the stent that they put in. So that's tomorrow. So looking forward to that.
I bet. Let's just take a moment to reflect on the fact that getting old sucks.
Yes. And I like it too, like, because you know, the whole kidney stone thing, they said, you know, it's a calcium. They have the different calcium stones, and most of them are calcium. Mm-hmm. But it's like, you can get it from having too little calcium or too much calcium. It's like, okay.
Like, what is the whole appropriate spectrum. Amount of calcium I
exactly
should be
how am I supposed to know, you know, how much calcium I should have? And then my wife always says that it's, you drink too much milk. I'm like, I hardly drink any milk at all. Like, I occasionally, maybe once or twice a week, I have a bowl of cereal, and that's it. Like, that is hardly drinking too much milk. When I was a kid, I drank milk all the damn time. So, like, this is nothing. Like, I don't know. It could be a lot of things.
And you're not a coffee person. Like, I drink, like, literally, no. I'm having iced coffee with, it's non-fat milk, but it's milk in it right now, so.
Yeah, I don't normally drink coffee. I've been, you know, drinking some more of the Red Bulls recently, but not even that much, like, maybe once a week. And it's only because I've had, like, a bag of these Red Bulls that I've had since last year sitting underneath my desk here that I wanted to drink them up before they expired. So I've been just going through those slowly. But I've had like maybe 5 Red Bulls in the 2022 so far. So it's like hardly nothing. And she's like, well, it's because you drank too much of those too. I honestly don't think so. I mean, like, one a day is not that bad.
One a day should not be a big deal. Let's talk video games. What is that playing by? I think I caught the title screen earlier. So playing behind you, because we are broadcasting live at the Voice Geeks Network, twitch.tv/VOG network, where we do broadcast live every Sunday night at 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific, right after the Bobby Blackwolf show. And sometimes you get some, we know it's a podcast and we try to be very aware and not rely too heavily on video, but I sometimes Loki will run video behind him. Actually, he always does.
Because we don't want to see my kitchen.
No, but you've got the Stanley Parable, right? But is this the new one? The remaster,
Ultra Deluxe.
10 years later, they've revisited it. That's pretty cool, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
I get to play it. I need to buy it.
I was
going to
ask that
it.
If you'd played it yet, but you know, you're just watching YouTubers run through it.
Yeah.
It's interesting how a lot of people will do games that way in this day and age, huh?
Well, I liked it, and I still will pick it up. I just haven't done it yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could probably do it now.
Not joining us tonight, I need to mention, Dark Sakura or Jamie Summers. You haven't heard her yet because she's not here tonight. Usually I don't really get into the reasons, like if people take a night off or whatever, like that's y'all's business. Unless, you know, people don't care and they want to say what's going on. For example, Loki disclosed his surgery on an earlier episode of the show. Dark Sakura was very open about her trip to Disneyland. She has mentioned this on Twitter. And I think this is worth just talking about and mentioning real quick. So I want to go to Twitter real quick here. The Dark Sakura put a tweet up that said, I'm not feeling very well tonight, so I'm taking the night off of OLR and my stream to rest and tend to my own mental health. Thank you all for understanding. And then some nice words about Bobby and us. And, you know, yeah, we don't often talk a lot about doing stuff for your mental health. And, you know, especially when it comes to podcasting, streaming, things of that sort, people oftentimes underestimate the toll that this type of stuff can have on your mental health. And that's why I've been like personally, even though I do streaming on the side, not just OLR, but on my own personal channel, I've sometimes personally resisted wanting to publish a schedule that like I'm going to be live on such and such day. And that's, I realize like 95% of streamers do that, and that's no shade or nothing. I'm just saying for me, like I have had all the time these things where I'm like, I'm going to stream tonight. And then when tonight comes around, I'm like, maybe I'm not, because I'm not really feeling extroverted tonight. I just kind of want to be a vegetable and play some Dead by Daylight on my own terms. And that's going to be that. But then other times I'm like, yeah, heck yeah, I'm going to get on stream and do that and do it. And I just kind of like to do that sort of thing on my own schedule. So don't ever like force yourself or push yourself if you're not like feeling it or whatever. If that sort of thing is going to be counterproductive to your mental health, because we don't often talk about that type of stuff enough. And it's important. You've got to take you time for your mental health and be in a good place like that, or else you're just going to make the problem worse by doing podcasts, broadcasting, twitching, whatever it is that's out there. And I see a lot of love in our chat room over at twitch.tv/VOGNetwork. Pod Culture saying a fucking man. Questbuster says streamers big and small take breaks too, because human. Fifth Dream says that is literally my entire life. I never know from one minute to the next if I feel like doing a thing physically or mentally. SSG100 Matt says yourself is the most important thing. Take care of you first before worrying about others' needs. Very yeah. Well said.
Yeah, I can probably elaborate more on, it's not even just streamer stuff, but like YouTube in general too. You can get burnt out
pretty fast. Creator culture, yeah.
My gaming week, we'll talk about burnout.
All right.
The stuff that I did.
Have you finally about had your fill of Minecraft?
No, I haven't. I've had my fill of a certain type of gameplay in Minecraft.
Okay, all right.
Because I had a project this week that I built that was extremely large. It took 3 weeks to put together, and I was just fed up with doing it at the end.
Oh,
but
boy.
It came out really good.
I was going to say, I saw the video because you posted it over in our Discord server, which, you know, of course, vognetwork.com/Discord. And if you aren't already subscribed to Loki on YouTube, you should fix that. He's Loki OLR on YouTube. Very easy to find. And yeah, well, so I will get into the video in a little bit in our gaming week so that you don't eat up all your gaming week here. But yeah, sure. It looked very impressive what you were doing in that game. But you also have a lot of patience to be doing something like that. That's for sure. But
it took
a
lot of patience.
Then I think he's been very bored this last week recovering from surgery.
It wasn't boring at all because, okay. The recovery from surgery is basically you couldn't really do like be active. So I mean, mm-hmm. I was on the computer, which is like that's normal anyways. Right. So it was instead of working at you know a 8 to 5 or 9 to 5 job or whatever. I was doing Minecraft during that time and during the time when I normally did. So it's like solid Minecraft, like 12, 14 hour days mm-hmm. for like a week and a half, just building one thing. And that was just, I was getting tired mm-hmm. by the end.
Mm-hmm. Bobby Blackwolf in chat. I want to go back to the topic we were just discussing about the mental health, because there's more great comments in chat and I want to read them. Bobby Blackwolf says, especially since content creators are basically gig workers and have to pay for their own health insurance, so they feel like they can't take time off. There's no PTO for a full-time streamer. That's a huge point. We have a story coming up later on, and I'm sure many of you have heard about this that's going on, and that is the talk about Twitch changing potentially some of the rates and the payouts for partners to try to stay profitable. And, you know, that has this huge impact. It's this incredibly uncharted territory, this whole making a living off being a streamer. And it's dangerous. It's risky. And that alone is can do a lot on mental health. Because as this news is showing this week, Twitch, Amazon can pull the rug like that. And there isn't shit you can do about it, quite frankly. Unless you
That's why folks diversify. I mean, you have to diversify your revenue streams.
Unless everybody, you know, groups up and does something together. But yeah, diversify your revenue streams. That is very important.
Because like even with YouTube, like you don't know like if there's gonna be another apocalypse thing, and YouTube's algorithms and stuff, it's screwy. They could, you know, content claimed for nothing. Like it could be your own original content, but someone's trolling it, or their algorithm will decide one day they're gonna delete your channel, or who knows? Like, so you have to just do merchandise, Patreon, Twitch subscriptions, whatever you can do.
Yeah.
Donations.
You know, VOG Network, we're probably missing out, not upping our YouTube presence. We have a YouTube channel and there's some good stuff on there, but we're not doing a lot of stuff regularly. I have ideas, but you know, there's always ideas. There's just the time to put ideas in motion, which isn't always plentiful. So anyway, I want to get some other comments here. Pod Culture says, it's been a couple years and I'm just now feeling the itch to really start podcasting again. It makes sense. Mike Def says, imposter syndrome is definitely not a joke. That is so true. And I deal with that a lot more than you guys probably think from, you know, having listened to this show as long as y'all have. Even if this is your first week, you know, this show's been around for coming up on 20 years now. I deal with imposter syndrome all the time. I deal with it in my professional life. I deal with it in what I do here. The first time I did panels at Dragon Con, the first time I did a huge panel at Dragon Con, I dealt with it. I deal with it with a lot of the hosting that I do on the weekends. Some of the big, you know, I've talked about some of the big names for me, getting to host, like doing the, Twin Peaks, panel and stuff. That was huge on imposter syndrome for me, where I'm like, you're going up there and it's like, they're going to know that you're just a fan who rests the stage. You have no business being up here amongst all these like actual talented people. And it's a real thing. And that absolutely plays into Twitch when sometimes people think nobody's going to watch my stream. Who cares about my stream and my thing? And that's why I kind of like urge people, nobody is going to watch your stream in the beginning. Most likely you may have one or two people, your friends and stuff, but it takes a long time and a lot of being regular and really immersing yourself in Twitch culture and networking and making friends to grow on this platform. And it takes a long time and a lot of investment. This isn't just something that happens overnight, and it's a pretty big deal. And Loki, I see you talking in chat about, you know, growing on YouTube, and it's taken you a long time just to grow a little bit. And are you at the monetized level yet? Are you still?
No, not even close.
But you're still a lot bigger than you were 2 years ago.
Yes. And like 2 years ago, I think I was at 100 and something. I can't remember what I was at like earlier this year, but I think it was like 200 something, like not that long ago, and I'm up to 350. I've been getting, like, it said about 30 subscribers a month now, which is pretty nice. It's because I'm kind of changing up my content a little bit, and people are starting to notice. And you'd be surprised. There's a lot of people that don't know, like, who you are, but then they'll find you, like, how do you not have more subscribers? Or, like, your content's really good. I don't understand.
I've seen those comments on your YouTube. I've seen them. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, like, it's nice to hear, honestly. And ironically, though, sometimes like the people that say that don't subscribe to your channel, you know, and they're like, I don't understand how you have more subscribers. But that's also hard to say, too, because like I go to my like YouTube studio dashboard or whatever, and I can't always see who's subscribing on my channel. I can only see if they share that or something, which is really stupid. But like I can't, like, and I wish I could see who is subscribing, because then I would call them out and like say, hey, thank you, or do something to like kind of promote that. But I can't. I can only see if they share it. And so, yeah, it's pretty nice. We also just got shouted out on another like Minecraft kind of compilation channel as well. So nice. That was thanks to my other creator that's on our server that was sending them tips and stuff. So nice. He got us noticed, and that was kind of nice. And then, you know, there'll be the new server that I'll be participating with later this summer, which that should really help expand things as well. They're certainly more organized, and we had a group meeting. They do monthly meetings, which is great. So we had a meeting just yesterday, actually, and that was pretty cool to kind of get to, you know, talk to them a little bit longer and stuff. So I'm hoping all that will help me grow. Really, I'm only trying to get to right now is 500, which means I can use the community features, which includes like posting non-video updates and doing like community polls and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they gate that behind 500. It's so stupid, but whatever, you know, it's fine. We'll do that. And then, yeah, someday I'll get to 1,000. Then I'll get like my pennies rolling in. Woo.
Getting some other comments in chat. Bobby Blackwell says it's a huge commitment to get monetized on YouTube. Well, I'll tell you what definitely doesn't get you monetized is doing nothing, right? You gotta try. You gotta try. Try again. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Questbuster says a streamer I tune into from time to time branched into YouTube and have been doing that for a few years. Only recently, near the beginning of the year, one of their videos finally popped off, and it just led to more of their stuff being seen. And I think this is very important from SJ1 under Matt, who says, always remember, though, that always support folks who are struggling. Jamie is getting a lot of support right now because we're an awesome community. True. Some streamers don't always have a close-knit community like that. Yes, we've had 20 years to build this, essentially. Sometimes the hurt people feel isn't obvious. So the moral should always be cool, be nice, and understanding with folks. You never know what the person is going through. Absolutely. There was a moment on this show, God, it was probably like 12 years ago at this point, but the folks that have been here a long time know this very well, and that was when I had my diva fit live on air, right? And you definitely remember this, Loki. It was when we were in the garage when I was living with Johnny, and everything was going wrong with the show. There was a tech issue, something was going on, and somebody said something in chat, and I don't even exactly remember the comment. But it was something about, like, you know, just another thing breaking down or something like that. And even though the person probably wasn't meaning to get out of my skin, wasn't trying to get under my skin, like, I just snapped. And I was just like, well, then fuck it and fuck the show, basically. And I stormed off the set, literally stormed off the set. And Loki, being the consummate professional he is, was like, all right, well, let's go to the next story. And finally,
I don't know how to deal with this. Let's just do the news.
I think exactly. And so, you know what? It happens. You never know. And I'm not saying, you know, and again, I don't blame that individual who I don't even think listens to the show anymore. But even if they did, I don't blame that individual. It just sometimes these things happen. And sometimes the chat comments and stuff, you never know what impact they're going to have. And yeah, Matt says there was actually something more recently. Of course, just a few weeks ago when you stopped the show, Rob, I saw you were done and I saw you just needed to stop for yourself. Yes, when the tech issues were like literally mentally. So for the podcast folks, you didn't see any of this because I just didn't put out a show that week. But the live folks here on Twitch, we started to do a show and there wasn't. Usually, even if there's only a partial show, I'll put it out on the feed anyway, but we really only did like 20 minutes. And the tech issues were just too overwhelming. And I got to a point where I was like, I'm not dealing with these tech issues anymore. I'm done. And of course, you know what? Give it 7 days, turn it off and then on again. Everything worked magically the next week. And now my phone, speaking of tech issues, my phone thinks I'm yelling at it. But anyway, yeah, I mean, it just sometimes you just have to step away. And that's exactly what that moment was just a whole, I'm overwhelmed. This is too much. If I don't step away, I'm going to have another fit. So this time I knew to stop it. Anyway. All right. plenty of meta stuff. Let's get into some news for the week going around in the gaming world. We're going to start off tonight with this story, which is this is something else. You know, I think a lot of people heard the story of Balan Wonderland, or maybe you pre-ordered it and you actually bought it and you played it, and maybe you still enjoyed it. I realize this game has its fans and its apologizers, and that's fine. You know, you like what you like and go off. But I think we can all kind of see that the community as a whole rejected this game. It didn't sell as much as it should have. Considering it was by the creator of Sonic and for a Square Enix game. And for the most part, it flopped. And people just kind of wrote it off as, well, man, Yuji Naka, I guess just couldn't make another good game. That's too bad. You know, we've all written it off. But now there's a very interesting layer, L-A-Y-E-R. There's another whole new interesting layer that's shown up with this. interesting too that actually now I just stopping to think this is very interesting coming after that whole discussion on assuming what a streamer is going through. Well, how about a game developer? Because this is very interesting. So Yuji Naka went to Twitter to vent about what happened with Balan Wonderworld. He said he was removed as the game's director 6 months before launch, and the developer RZest submitted a final build of the game that wasn't final and it had bugs in it. Yuji Naka also on Twitter claimed that one of the songs in the game was going to be reworked for promotional purposes and not using the track that was straight from the game. Yuji Naka said that game creators should be able to improve their games until the very end. When he requests to address and when his request to address these issues were ignored, he decided to sue Square Enix. Yuji Naka says if he was kept on as the head of the project, it would have never released in an unfinished state. And he found that seeing Balan Wonderworld release in an unfinished state was a true disgrace. There's a lot of comments that are on Twitter. It's a little much for me to read, but let me try to get some highlights here. He talked about Sonic. For example, in Sonic the Hedgehog, 2 weeks before going gold, we changed the mechanics where if you had even a single ring, you would not die. Even up until the very end, we were trying to improve the game, and I hope that everyone is still enjoying those games today. And I think everybody knows that mechanic in Sonic the Hedgehog, and that's important, right? He also says the business relationship with RZest fell apart due to my comments about RZest submitting the final build without fixing bugs, even though there were problems during development and I was pushing for further polish. Oshima spoke to the producer, Fujimoto, about this. Oshima wrote in an email to Fujimoto saying, "I gathered the development staff and informed them about pushing back the trial phase of development. This decision was made by producer Fujimoto. Let's do our best for Mr. Fujimoto." The staff applauded and cheered. This was wholly unexpected, and we were very touched. The staff, who had recently been rather dejected, were in an instant revitalized. Thank you very much. The entire staff will do our best. Yuji Naka said, "I don't have anything to do with the development timeline because that is created by the producer, not me, the director. Such tight deadlines are decided by the producer. Something didn't seem quite right." Personally, I believe that it is a true disgrace that Balan Wonderworld was released in the state that it was in. I wanted to show the world an action game in its proper light. Therefore, I believe that Square Enix and RZest are companies that care about neither games nor their fans.
Yep.
That's a huge dagger to throw at Square Enix, which is, you know, with especially such a large company where, you know, this is the same company that has huge fans and people that feel much differently when it comes to things like Final Fantasy 14, or I suppose the Final Fantasy series in general. What are your thoughts hearing all this, Loki? What did you think when you heard about this?
It's unfortunate because, like, I did kind of blame Yuji Naka for like how bad this turned out originally, because you kind of look at it like almost like a Mighty Number 9 type of scenario where it's like, oh, you know, you think you're gonna, you know, make this great Mega Man clone or something like that, and it ends up turning out to be garbage. And it's like, well, maybe you just couldn't do that. And it's like, oh, maybe this is another Mighty Number 9 again. But we got to remember, no, that there's also publishers that make really dumb decisions constantly.
Right.
And Square Enix is one to do that, to cut corners, to, you know, on some other products like Final Fantasy 14, it's very well put together and stuff. But I think there's different projects have different levels of upper management kind of oversight on, whereas, like, you know, some of these remasters of the older Final Fantasy games that kind of get kind of rushed out and look kind of like garbage, and there's like weird bugs and stuff in them. Like, I think that kind of stuff is kind of, you know, what's to blame here. I wouldn't be surprised if RZS got like some sort, or maybe management RZS got some sort of bonus for being able to publish the game when they could, so they rather release it with bugs, get that kickback,
yeah,
rather than put out a good product. Who knows?
Some comments from chat. E3VL says, worst game of last year for me. Mike Def says, I think Naka is in the right, but also the game was beyond saving from its development history. Sacred Jade says, I believe Naka-san, Square Enix hasn't been the best in the last few years. Questbuster says, I agree. The game was in development since 2018, and a lot of core mechanics have had to have been baked in by the time he was dismissed that the rest of the game had to be built around. 6 months isn't really a lot of time to put in heavy redesign. Yeah, And here's the
but
thing.
If he was the producer, though, or you know, whoever that was, you know, approving timelines and stuff, you know, maybe if he thought he couldn't get it done in time, then they would push it back. I mean, I don't know.
Well, and that's the thing. I do think this story is fascinating. And I do think, you know, it should make us all think differently about how did a flop become a flop? Did these people set out to make a flop? No. But did all of their visions on how to get it done get aligned? Clearly not. But and so I think there's, you know, definitely something to be said here about maybe how fast some of us were to, you know, kind of say, oh, Yuji Naka made a flop, when maybe he really was behind the scenes trying to push back on some of that. However, all that being said, I will say, I think Yuji Naka did make a key mistake, a critical mistake. And it's that part in his thing where he talks about the Sonic the Hedgehog and changing that up to, you know, 2 weeks before the game was released. Sir, you're not making games for the Sega Genesis anymore. Games don't work the same way that they did literally 30 years ago at this point. And so, you know, if you want to go all the way back to the days of the Atari 2600, those games were made by one person. And then when you get into the NES era, some of those games were made by one person. Like, you look at Balloon Fight, you know, as, you know, Satoru Iwata's, you know, one of his, you know, biggest well-known games, or small teams, if you will, when you get in the NES era, and then getting into the Sega Genesis, still, it was more smaller teams. That's not how games are made anymore. Not a Square Enix production.
Right. But, like, it's not necessarily, I mean, it's still, I think, a good example, though, like, just changing game mechanics, but should you really be changing game mechanics 2 weeks, you know,
right,
from launch? I mean, I get it, like, I don't know what he's changing it from, like, right. If there's like, oh, you have to have 50 rings in order not to die or something like that. I don't know what it was before where they decided to drop it down, but that's like tweaking a value. It's like, okay, yeah. Well, yeah, this boss is going to do 10 damage points instead of 2 damage points or something like that. Like, that's just like small tweaks. That's what you do, like, in the part of the whole gameplay testing and balancing phase of, like, game development. It doesn't matter the size of the team, but that... Right. That's just an example of, like, we constantly work towards making the game better up until launch. Right. That's what development teams are supposed to do. You don't just go, okay, time to kick back. You know, it's like, right, you're trying to smash, you know, bugs and stuff like that. But, like,
but certain things, it sounded like there's a lot. Place 6 months beforehand, they weren't. That's why, you know, ultimately. So, again, I think mistakes were made all around. I don't think Square Enix is certainly not blameless in this scenario.
No,
but I'm not sure Yuji Naka is 100% the good guy. I think he made mistakes too. And the one thing, you know, I'm not seeing a lot of that in here in this discussion for the lawsuit is, you know, what did he learn about himself from this experience? So that's just something I just kind of notice. So anyway, going to our chat over at twitch.tv/VOG Network. SS2100 Matt says, seems like there were F your visions. We got to get this game out now because we're invested too much and need to get a return here. SS2100 Matt says, 6 weeks out, your QA testing should be done, not changing mechanics. Last week we talked about Xenoblade Chronicles 3 and how it's coming out early now. Do you know how a game comes out early? A lot of planning and getting a lot of shit locked in well before, 2 weeks before.
Or just releasing it early, mm-hmm, and hoping for the best, and then putting out a roadmap later on saying that, like, here's how we're going to fix it. Here's our roadmap and our roadmap of a roadmap. Yeah, so there's two options there, the good and the evil.
Questbuster says, huge respect for Naka and his place in gaming history. No one will take that away. Yes, I agree. But he's still human like everyone else. Absolutely.
Right.
As
exactly.
Are we all.
Like,
as are we all.
As, like, you know, perfect example, Mighty Number 9. You know, that's another perfect example. Like, on paper, that should have been a really fun, like, Mega Man type game. It wasn't. On the other hand, then we also have, what was that Bloodstained Rituals of the Night or whatever, mm-hmm, whereas that is a good, like, Castlevania like game. Yeah. So some people can do it, some people try to do it and it's not as easy as, you know, just being a certain role on a team. You know, it's, you're running this company and doing all this other stuff, like, mm-hmm, like Mighty Number 9 had a lot of stuff that was, like, wrong with it, like when they start pitching a whole nother game on top of it, like a new Mega Man Legends type thing, and like an animated series and all this stuff. It's like, okay, cool. Let's focus back on that game that you need to work on, you know, not just all these other projects down the road. Like, it's just, you have to have the right talents to be able to do just the game development part and then all the other publishing and stuff parts as well. Because if you don't, then it'll fall apart, even if you are a talented developer.
I'm hoping I'm pronouncing this right. I'm sorry if I'm not in chat. Gadats in chat says, it's interesting. I've played a lot of team fight tactics in League of Legends over the years, so I'm pretty used to constant changes to my game, but those are free-to-play models. Yeah, exactly. It's not something where, you know, they're taking pre-orders, getting your money up front, you know, to deliver a game on a certain date. I think usually the vision of those free-to-play games is usually it's that, you know, they're going to grow their subscribers over time. That's what success looks like to a free-to-play game. It is very rare you have a game like Pokemon Go that has gazillions of players out the gate. That's not the model of success. And that's not even, and this has been discussed many times, that's not what Niantic was expecting either. Is that game would be huge out the gate. It's all about growing your base with those games. So it is a much different model to approach. Anyway. But yeah, Yuji Naka, he's human. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out in the coming months, but it definitely puts a whole other spin on this conversation. Anyway, let's move on and talk about our gaming weeks and the types of video games that we have been playing this week. Loki, you were talking a little bit about it, but how was your recovery gaming week?
My gaming week was all Minecraft because I had a large project that I had decided to do. So in my S&P series on Nerdcraft, I've been working on this whole steampunk, you know, build. And so part of that is going to be building a city, you know, a steampunk city or something. So I was trying to terraform everything to make the land kind of usable to build buildings on. And I realized it was just really flat and boring. And so, like, my other folks, since we have it like broken up with different factions, so they have like the folks that are building mountains and one doing like gothic architecture, and then I think somebody else was doing something, but the mountain stuff looked really cool, and I was like, well, it'd be cool to build like a mountain. And then my project got overscoped to hell, so like it took forever to clear out the land that was in there. Then I ended up going into a creative test world, designing a mountain, basing it off of like some of the block palettes and stuff in this mod Terralith, which has these really, Terralith is awesome. It has like a really beautiful art, landscape and everything, and all these different mountains and just amazing landscape. So I based it off of that. And then I decided, because I'm a perfectionist, I need to put real Minecraft, caves inside these mountains. So I also grab some of those out of my world and kind of built the schematics around all that stuff. So after I had all that done, and then because originally the schematic was like 4 million blocks, I was like, nope, not doing that, because it was solid. So I hollowed it out, which took forever. And then once I had it all hollowed out and had the schematic in place, I needed to gather about 90,000 blocks to start building. And that's 90,000 outside of like the actual smoothing of the landscape to match the land around it. So the landscape smoothing itself also took about another, I think it was like 120,000, I don't know, it ended up being roughly just over 200,000 blocks I had to place or remove, or it was a lot. So that took several weeks just to design it. And then once I got, it took like a week or something to clear out the space, and then to actually build everything took like a week and a half to 2 weeks. And when I say a week and a half to 2 weeks, I'm not talking about like after work each day. It was during my recovery time, I was putting in 12 to 14 hour days playing Minecraft,
doing this.
So it was a massive project, like massive project.
So I'm showing the video for the Twitch people, and for the folks on the podcast, of course, you can see it too. And I would urge you to go check it out over at Loki OLR on YouTube. But this mountain we're looking at in Minecraft, you built that.
Yep.
One brick at a time.
One block at a time. It's hollow, so it's wow. it you know, it's a lot less material. So yeah, but yeah, the time lapse on that video is great. I the music and everything, it turned out really well. But yeah, there's actual keys in there. In fact, I think I actually, a little bit later in the clip here, I end up like going into one of the caves to kind of show it off. But
yeah, we can just it's there you are in the cave.
Yeah, there's one of the caves that I was in. So like it actually has caves, and I lit up everything so that mobs don't spawn in there. But
it
yeah, that
really
was one.
Makes me, like when I watch your videos, I'm so inspired to play Minecraft, and then I do play Minecraft, and then I remember how fucking bad I am at it. That like I need to not play survival mode. That's the thing. But,
you don't play survival. There's a lot of stuff that they've changed nowadays that makes it a lot easier. Like lighting up stuff. Like monsters don't come out unless there's light level zero, well, so you can put fewer torches and stuff.
Here's what I didn't finish the story. Here's what really happens, Loki. And then I'll start playing Minecraft. And I'm like, this is too hard. And then I'll be like, I'll go play No Man's Sky because that's like Minecraft enough.
Yeah,
that's what ends up happening. Anyway, check out that video over at YouTube, Loki OLR, of course. So I don't want to show the whole thing, but I had to show.
Yeah, that's fine.
About. Yeah.
But yeah, it was a massive project, and it was my fault for making it too big, because like I started off and the mountain wasn't that big, and I was like, this doesn't look that great. And so it just kept getting bigger, and then it kept getting more elaborate, and it was just what I should have done is broke it up for multiple videos, but I just wanted to finish it. And so I did it all in one, and it's really way too much for one video. It was And unfortunately, like I looked at the time, like the last video I'd released before that was my April Fool's video, which was on April 9th. And this is like almost 3 weeks later. So I try not to space that out that much because I want to make sure that I have, you know, my content in there. I try to get stuff out at least every week or 2 weeks. I did put a hardcore one in between those, but it's just, you know. It turned out really well. Now I can just go focus on buildings and stuff and not actually doing more landscape stuff. I'll do some landscape stuff, but it's going to be a lot less big like this. But it just, yeah, it turned out really well. So hopefully it gets noticed.
All right.
Because, yeah, it took a lot of time.
My gaming week, a lot of the same stuff. For me as well, a lot of Final Fantasy 14. I was streaming that. I've been leveling Sage in that game. So I think I've got Sage up to 85 or 86 now. So I'm getting really close to 90. So I did a couple streams. I was Shane was on there and we were running dungeons talking about random stuff. I'm very thankful Shane will stream with me so I have someone to talk to, because then that way it doesn't matter if like no one's watching, we're able to have a conversation. So it's really nice. So that's been fun to stream. Also been playing, I think I sometimes understate how much I play some of the mobile games like Pikmin, which I mean Pikmin is really like a set it and forget it kind of game, that, you know, when you're like planting flowers and stuff. But those games really do incentivize the walking that I do and the exercise that I've been getting. And, you know, I've been very transparent here on this show that I made a lot of changes with a lot of my lifestyle stuff about 6 months ago. And today I hit a landmark of 45 pounds lost since last summer, basically. And, you know, a lot of that is gamification of walking through things like Pokemon Go, Ingress, somewhat, and Pikmin has been huge with it, because Pikmin Bloom came out right around the time all that started happening. So it's been hugely like motivational for that stuff. So if it seems like I'm always talking about the same games, I also sometimes don't talk enough about some of them that I do put a lot in, because it incentivizes the real world moving around stuff that I need to be really doing a lot right now. So I just hit level 55, or am I 56? I'm somewhere in there in Pikmin. So I'm getting pretty. I'm at the point where my level is in silver. It changes to silver at 50. So I know the level cap is 100. So someday I'll get there. I'll try. I keep trying. Otherwise, I actually played a little bit of Dead by Daylight today, which I haven't been playing as much of that lately, but they're doing an event this weekend. They just launched a new Rift. I don't think it's on our show notes tonight. So they made a big deal that they... they have announced that one of their characters is gay. As part of the, you know, they know that the LGBTQIA plus community keeps them afloat on Twitch. And so it's one of those things where they knew they needed the representation of the game, so they did it. A lot of different hot takes on it. Some folks feel that, you know, this character's been out for 6 years. And
yeah, does it seem like it's a little bit pandering? Like, I get it. Like, it's good to have representation, but it's also, like, kind of pandering.
Yeah. Both those things can be true, is that it's nice to have representation, but it does feel a little bit like pandering. Now, at least I'll say this. It's not June, so at least they're doing it outside of Pride Month. And they released a really nice new Pride charm. They have the new Progress Pride flag is available in game to redeem too, which is nice. You know, and again, it's one of those things where it's like, well, I don't want to look a gift horse in the mouth. I'm glad the representation is there. That's cool. But does it feel a little bit like, gosh, a lot of players are leaving our game. I hope the gays don't leave us. We better throw them a gay character. And you know what? Let's make the most conventionally stereotypically hot one, the gay one. The shirtless one, the gay, and sure enough, that's what we got. And so there's a little bit of, I don't know, there's just a little bit of, but I'm not complaining, but it's also just Dead by Daylight. It's whatever. But I want to make clear, that's not the reason why I started playing again. I mean, it's neat. And I did log in to get the new Pride flag. That was more of a big deal than the character, to be quite honest, because I don't care about lore. Dark Soccer, she cares about lore. Maybe she has more of an opinion on that. We can ask her next week, but I don't really care about lore. I just care about the game. But they have the double Rift tokens going on right now. And, you know, that means you can earn cosmetic rewards, which is kind of fun. So I've been playing a little bit of that. So, all right, let's move on and get into some other gaming news for the week. And Loki is going to start us off tonight talking about, you know, some schedule not changes, some things still
some things just stay the same,
right.
I guess.
Some things just, you know, some things the venue was already rented.
Right. So Microsoft Bethesda and now Microsoft are going to be continuing the tradition of having a presentation that interrupts our show on June 12th. So they're going to be doing the Microsoft and Bethesda, not E3 showcase, that will show off what's going to be coming up on their Xbox and PC and Game Pass ecosystems. Cool. I'm excited.
Yeah. It's actually, even though there is no E3 this year, it's kind
That's
of...
actually at 10 a.m. Oh, my mistake. Yeah, it won't interrupt our show this time.
But it's nice that they're keeping some of the pomp and circumstance that gamers come to expect from June. So it's nice to see that Microsoft / Bethesda is kind of holding down the fort, so to speak. And now that it's both those companies at the same time, because I don't, you know, with the pandemic and everything, we haven't really had a traditional event in a while. So it'll be kind of neat to see Microsoft and Bethesda sort of joining forces for this year, in a little, which I would assume is going to be a little more, feel a little more traditional, maybe. So yeah. And I would bet that they booked the venue a year ago.
Probably.
So, probably. Before there wasn't going to be an E3.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. Do I dare ask, or is it just stupid to ask, what do you think they're going to show? What do you think we're going to get?
Starfield, Fable, probably more content for Halo Infinite. I don't know. Microsoft has so many studios now. I mean, there could be a plethora of things that they could show.
I think Starfield with the game. We know Starfield's coming out in November, unless they push it back, which they could always do. But I think they will. You know, Bethesda's not afraid to release a game with bugs. So Starfield will probably still come out in November. So I would fully expect we're going to get a deep dive in Starfield in June. I am pretty hyped about that. I like space. So I'm curious, you know, how that game's going to look and play. I'm hoping it's Elder Scrolls in space. I really am. So we'll see. Speaking of Elder Scrolls, I'm not expecting that we see Elder Scrolls 6, but I'd be really excited if we got a little more than what we've had so far, like another teaser. You know, I think because Starfield is this year, it would be silly to expect Elder Scrolls 6 is also this year. I think that game is probably still 2 years away, but I would be,
I'd be excited for new Fallout, not 76. Although we probably will get some Fallout 76 content that they'll probably show off.
But another huge thing I want to see, and I'm so excited about it because I do think it'll be, I think this is going to be a this year release, the Fable game from, you know, the Forza Horizon team. I am fucking excited about that. And I'm thinking June is when we're going to get to see some actual footage.
There better be some really awesome, like, some really awesome wagon racing in that game.
Now you want them to make an Oregon Trail game where you can race the Oregon Trail and ford the river.
I want it like Oregon Trail, but literally with the Horizon, with the modern racing aesthetic to it. Like, you know, this Oregon Trail. Yeah. I want the same radio stations in there, even though that's completely unrealistic. Like, I just want it absolutely. Just that.
Okay.
Modern Oregon Oregon Trail.
I'm down. I think that's exciting. All right. Let's see. I guess we should move on to our next story. Which, of course, bear with me a little bit here. All right. So let's talk a little bit about PlayStation Plus, because we're going to get the new PlayStation Plus and the... you know, the new cloud stuff. Well, it's not really new, but there's a whole bunch of new stuff getting added to it. We're getting that later in June, which, by the way, have we had Sony confirm that they are planning something for June? We haven't had them confirm that yet, right?
Think so. They do their own thing.
But, I mean, all of these changes are supposed to happen, what, like around like June 13th or something, which is very conveniently timed right around that same, right?
For Naughty 3.
June 13 is when it's supposed to launch in the U.S. So, I mean, it's very conveniently timed to have an unveil of what all is going to be in that. But anyway. However, even though this is Sony's answer to Game Pass in some ways, it's not going to fall for the same stuff that Game Pass fell for. Meaning, if you're trying to stack up your subscription to get many free years of the Ultimate PlayStation Plus, tough cookie. You cannot do it. It's already been shut down. Sony has temporarily disabled the ability to stack PlayStation Plus subscription time ahead of these new changes that are coming in June. The company will take the longest running active subscription when setting the converted membership's end date. So basically, you could stock up on regular Plus cards to get the same time as a premium subscriber. You could have before, but you can't do that anymore. And more information has come out since then about exactly how many days things will convert to. So it's like if you have like a PlayStation Now, it only converts like 18 or something like that. So anyway, if you didn't get in on this early, it's already been shut down. So
Glad they're doing everything they can to make it not a good deal.
Orange Wright in chat says, my current subscription lasts until March 2024. Well, lucky you, because you got in on that before they changed everything. So I'm curious what the new PlayStation Plus is going to look like with all the retro games, but you know, it just kind of depends on what's in there, I think, a little bit. So, but we're starting to get our first glance at what might be in there. Because apparently some of the games that are going to be on the premium PlayStation Plus, they're starting to leak onto the PlayStation Network. Users on Reddit found new listings for classic titles with new thumbnail art, and apparently they're starting to show up within that PSN backend, so these would be games that are very likely for PlayStation Plus. So games that have been discovered so far, Tekken 2 from Namco, Mr. Driller, and Ridge Racer for the PSP, all have been spotted on there. But that's it. So that's only three games out of, what, like 450? that we know of so far. But I mean, I'm excited to see Ridge Racer coming back. I wish it was a new Ridge Racer, but
they also mentioned Worms Armageddon and Worms World Party as well.
Yes, those got spotted later. So a few days later, they found, those two games as well. So, but we don't have any official confirmation from Sony as of yet. Orange Wright says, cool to see PSP games. Yes, we did know that PSP games were coming out as part of this too. What we don't know yet, PlayStation Vita. They never did confirm that, so I wouldn't expect PlayStation Vita. And that might have to do with the back touch panel, maybe making a lot of games. But there's a lot on the Vita that wouldn't need that, you would think. I don't know.
Well, they did put out a console called the PlayStation TV that doesn't have a back panel.
So yeah, that shouldn't be an issue, I guess. All right. Well, let's move on. More updates in Sony's world, sort of, right?
Yep. So apparently there's rumors that Final Fantasy 16 is near the end of development, according to the producer. So I guess we'll be seeing this soon, maybe?
If it's towards Sony the end? Sony does do something in June, I think it's about time we're going to see some more
Final Fantasy 16. But, you know, the last 10% is also the last 90%, so it could be a while, you know? So we'll see. But yeah, Final Fantasy 16.
Well, something to consider too, when that game was first unveiled, about a year ago at this point, right? When that game was first unveiled, it was really far along, like just in what you were seeing in the trailer and all that stuff. I mean, they were running it on a PC emulating PlayStation 5, but I mean, still, like just with the cutscenes you were seeing, they showed in-game combat footage and stuff like that. So like the game did seem like it was pretty far along at that point last year than it has been, than most games are when they announce them. So, you know, but again, obviously I want the game to be good. So I want them to take their time. And just get it right. But, you know, again, with Yoshida producing it, who has basically saved the Final Fantasy franchise with Final Fantasy 14, in my opinion, I have big expectations for this game, which is probably a dangerous thing. But I really can't wait for it. So I hope it's this holiday, but I will wait longer if I need to for the game to be right, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I need to go back and finish the Final Fantasy VII remake and stuff and 15.
Oh, it's pretty good. 7's pretty good. 15 is okay. 15 is worth your time, but I did find the last sequence to be a bit of a letdown. Although it did have a good ending. I will say the ending of 15 was more satisfying than most.
I'm so just, I don't even want to call it old school. I'm just old at this point, but like, I miss the turn-based Final Fantasy games.
Sure.
Like, that's what it was. This fast action's too fast for my feeble elderly hands, according to the internet. You know, because like elderly's 25 now, so
get good.
I don't really know what meme Loki. Is, but like
get good.
I guess like I don't know. Like I just want to relax and be able to strategize on like what I need to do and not like have to do all that. I don't know.
Well, remember, Final Fantasy 15 did have two modes. It had the normal combat and it had the wait mode or whatever.
I know it did. And I played the demo and the demo was fine, I guess. But like, it's just not the same, you know? Like, honestly, when we were looking at Final Fantasy games and like how they kind of work, like Lost Odyssey was a great Final Fantasy game. Like that's how it should be. Like modern game with like the Final Fantasy combat. I mean, that's kind of what it is.
Well, some would argue go play Octopath Traveler. That's what Square Enix is doing now.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
Live Alive's coming out soon.
I'm just stubborn, I guess. I don't know. I just need to give it another chance. That's like why I haven't really played like Kingdom Hearts either, because like, yet I still buy them for some stupid reason. But like,
blame the kids.
The kids don't play those games.
Someday
they don't
will.
Play those
Someday
games. Like, yeah, sure. Yeah.
I'm
so, like,
trying to help you.
No, you are. Like, yeah. I don't know. I want to enjoy those games, but they're so convoluted. Like Final Fantasy 15, like, kind of bored me. Like, I couldn't really follow the storyline. It was just, I don't know. I didn't give it much of a chance, but I'll go back to it at some point. I don't know.
Bobby Blackwolf in chat says Persona is a great turn-based JRPG, but it's a time commitment. Bobby. I'm so disappointed. That was the perfect opportunity for you to say Yakuza Like a Dragon is a great JRPG.
That is a great
to get me to play it again, and you missed that is the opportunity. Window's closed now. That window's closed now.
You are correct. That is a great RPG, and I do love that game, and that is a game I do need to go back and finish. I just need to get my Xbox Series X back from my sister, who's been borrowing it for the last 4 months. So I need to get that back so I can finish that game. But yes, that is a great game, and I hear it has a great story. So more of that, please. Like, I will take, you know, I'll take the Yakuza games are fun. Mm-hmm. I like that, you know, but like, let's put that same team on like something else too. Like,
well, you know, that is, they are. They're now making, that's now the main Yakuza series. So yes, they will be making something
nice.
Else. Roast Muffin in our chat, hello, says the 7 remake is the best of the like action-based Final Fantasy. And I definitely agree. The 7 remake was far better than it had any right to be, like, honestly. And just
that one was okay. Maybe I can just ease myself into that type of gameplay with 7 and then go into 15 and
yes.
16.
Well, and here's the thing about 7. Like, and I don't know how much you've spoiled yourself on the story. And quite frankly, we're far past the moratorium on spoilers, and I ought to be able to talk openly about it now. However,
sure, I don't care. It's fine.
I'm going to bite my tongue for the listeners, but I'm just going to say, again, the story in 7, like, you think you know what's going to happen. And I assure you, you do not know what's going to happen. And it's worth playing because I think that commentary in and of itself is very good. Like, again, like the 7 remake is really worth playing just on the commentary of remakes in general. I'll say that much. It's very interesting. So play it. All right. But I know how it goes, Loki. You have a 200,000 brick mountain to make in Minecraft. You have no fucking time for Final Fantasy VII.
I'm done with the brick mountain for now, but yes, I would need to go back. Yes, I would need to, that's the thing. Like, and going back to the whole content creation thing, you don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Like, I feel like constantly it's like, okay, video put out now, clock reset, but it's still ticking. You know, it's like, yep. I gotta put more stuff out, yep. Especially my hardcore series. Cause that's what's bringing in the viewers is that. So like, I gotta give the people what they want. And so,
E3VL yeah. in chat says Final Fantasy VII Remake is essentially a multiverse game. That's about as far into spoiler territory I'm going to let you go. But yes. Yes. And that's what, yeah, the multiverse is all the rage right now. So
I know, I'm excited.
And let me tell you again, while we're talking multiverse, you must see the movie Everything Everywhere All at Once. It is the best movies I have ever seen. And I apologize if I'm hyping this up too much, but I really urge you, don't read anything about the movie. Just go see it and you will be so, so satisfied. It is just a good fucking movie. And it goes to show that movies do not have to be gigantic budgets like Marvel style movies. And that's no shade on Marvel because, you know, those movies have their place too. But
I am super excited about Doctor Strange.
Yeah, I know, and lots of people are, and that's great. I'm excited, but just and Michelle Yeoh. End of sentence. Michelle Yeoh. Period. Yes. End of sentence. That's all that needs to be said. Michelle Yeoh.
And,
the great.
And then Short Round. I don't remember his name, but yeah, like I hear he's great in it.
Oh my God! The fact that he's come back from acting after like 40 years and does that. I mean, people are going to forget this movie come Oscar time, and I don't put a lot of stock into award show.
I hope not.
It is our responsibility as the internet. Internet, rally around me. It is our responsibility as the internet, period. A corporation. Al Gore's internet. It is our responsibility that the Academy does not forget about this movie come next Oscar season. And if Michelle Yeoh doesn't get nominated... I was going to make a slap joke, but then I realized that would be in bad taste, so I'm not going to make it. All right, let's move on. Loki, you have another story for us.
Yes. So Game Freak is implementing an optional 4-day work week, which sounds amazing. So they're giving employees an extra day off of the week for the purpose of childcare or family care, and it's able to be done on a monthly basis. To give like a flexible work environment, they said, where needed. But it does come with a 20% pay cut. So if it's a 4-day work week and you're not working an extra day, so they're just not paying you for that
day.
They're
not paying you for that day. Exactly. Yes.
So that is a bit misleading. that's just more, that's not paid time off either. That's,
no,
yeah.
That's just. You can work only 4 days and we'll give you 4/5 salary for doing that. But okay. I mean, you have an option.
At least they have benefits.
Yeah, there are some people, you know, as much as we're kind of staring at this and blinking right now, there are people where this would fit very well into their life. And, you know, it's like, oh, I could hold down a full-time job and benefits and so forth, but also have that extra day for the bandwidth I need to, you know, take care of kids, go to school, whatever it is. You know, everybody's life is different.
And it's optional, so at least they have an option to do that. And, you know, it's you have just have to weigh it. But at the very least, so like if it were in the United States and they were not paying you for that extra day, they would probably be taking away your benefits as well because you're not a full-time employee at that point. Right. You know, like that's the kind of shitty things that U.S. employers do. Yeah. So, cool. Like to see them do that.
SSJ100 Matt says, I do know places and friends who work at places where they have 4 10-hour days. Yeah, I do. Actually, my day job company has this option as well for most positions. Sometimes the position doesn't kind of let you do that. But for most positions, you can do that. For the work at home, especially where you're not commuting, I think that works very well for a lot of people.
I would totally do that, but unfortunately I'm salaried, so mm-hmm. for my 4 10-hour days and then another 8-hour day, it's still paid the same. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, unfortunately you can't do that, but that was an option I know back when I was in our customer service center. Yeah. When we were in the call center, that you could do 4 10s if you wanted to. I just couldn't swing that either. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so and again, sometimes with schedule, like, you know, you have kids, it's harder to work 10-hour days when you have to get your kid from school and those sorts of needs. That's harder to do. So, you know, it just depends on your life situation. So, but it's nice to see employers have that flexibility. And I think that is a huge thing that the pandemic, good employers have responded to the pandemic with more flexibility. Good ones have, and they'll persevere for that. Anyhow, let's move on. We were talking about PlayStation Plus a little bit ago. Let's talk about those game trials, because again, part of the perks for PlayStation Plus is that you're supposed to get free game trials up to like a certain, I think 2 hours in or something like that, to really get a robust taste of the game. And there was some reporting going around on social media that Sony is asking developers to create time-limited trials for games for the new PlayStation Plus premium service. But now it's coming out from Ethan Gack at Kotaku that actually the PlayStation Store team is going to take this on and set up the trials for the developers. So it's interesting how that rumor led to this kind of shifting course here. In a tweet, Ethan says, sources tell me, of course, a good old source, which means it's somebody inside Sony that just doesn't want to get in trouble. PlayStation Store team will create the 2-hour time trials for developers, so it shouldn't be extra work, though I've heard concerns from others about Sony monetizing a perk and not sharing that revenue with studios. Ooh, that's an interesting side effect as well, is that, you know, there might be people that play the 2-hour demo and decide not to get the game, and the publisher doesn't get anything from that, even though Sony did, because they're gating the demos.
I would assume this is going to work just like the trials work with, I think it was EA that was, you know, actually not that they mentioned the trials and stuff. Wasn't it Sony that was doing that? I thought they were already doing trials for full games, or maybe I'm thinking EA or something like that through their like EA,
thinking of
early
EA.
Accessing.
You're thinking of EA through their EA Play or whatever it's called. Yeah.
I swear to God, though, there was something outside of EA that was doing full. They were doing like trials for like full games or something like that.
Well, Steam, if you want to, I mean, it's not really a trial, but they do the refund within 2 hours, and some people abuse that as a trial.
No, well, no, not like that, but like I want to say, like, gosh, was it PlayStation? It was through PlayStation Plus, actually. They had full game trials. This is a great way to try before you buy. Play a game for up to 1 hour and then purchase the game to unlock trophies and continue your progress. So this is something they already had. This is not a new thing. They had it on the PlayStation 4.
Interesting. But now it's going up to 2 hours, and it's only going to be in PlayStation Premium. That's interesting.
Woo! We changed the 1 to a 2, and then we charged you for it.
That does track with Sony. Remember when playing online was free?
That's some Yuji Naka level tweaking, you know, of services there, you know.
Next story.
So you want to hear something scary? They're going to be making a Poppy Playtime movie.
Nope.
That's pretty cool.
Nope.
I would totally watch that. It's awesome. But yeah, so Poppy Playtime, if you're not aware, is a indie survival horror video game that involves a toy factory with you know, fun creatures like Fuzzy Wuzzy or Huggy Wuggy or something like that. I don't remember his name, but yes, so horror game with giant like puppets and stuff like that. But it is being developed by Studio 71, who, if you're not familiar with that name, they did the VHS series. It was like a bunch of kind of, I don't know if it was like a horror anthology or something like that, but I remember it had to do with like people finding VHS tapes with like horrible things on it. So, of course, you know, the company Mob Games, that develops the game, has said that they could have never imagined that this game be so popular as it is, and they're beyond excited to work with Studio 71 to transform Poppy into a feature film. So I am excited.
It's going to be scary.
It is going to be damn scary, but like I want to see that. And also, whatever happened to the stupid FNAF movie? Like, is that ever going to happen? I'm so disappointed.
Have you seen this? There's this post going around Facebook. Hold on. Okay. I didn't want to show the name of the person, but I'll show the name of the sheriff's office that shared it, because this is wild. You want to see this latest thing going around Facebook? As I saw, I used to, at my old job, I used to work with some Karens. So I still follow some on Facebook, and one of them posted this. So it's from, okay, hold on. I'm going to show this here. Hold on. Sorry. Bear with me, because I'm doing it live. There. Okay. Attention parents, the county sheriff's office looked at the origins of a controversy about a character named Huggy Wuggy from a survival horror video game called Poppy Playtime. This is a survival horror video game developed and published by American indie developer Mob Games, etc., etc., etc. They're issuing a warning to parents due to a series of videos surrounding Huggy Wuggy. The warnings are due to the character's initially child-friendly videos, which very quickly turn nightmarish. The concerning videos are fan-made, produced by someone who admires a particular TV show, film, or video game. Here are some of the YouTube channels that made the concerning videos, and there's a list there. The videos include offensive language, cartoon representations of alcohol use, blood, stabbings, decapitations, attempted murder, murder, and the bloody aftermath of a car crash. In one of the videos, a toy cartoon character tells a cartoon person, "My hugs don't hurt one bit. You'll be dead before the pain comes." The character then hugs and squeezes the person until they turn blue and passes out. What?
Why are the police warning people about YouTube content is what I want to know.
That's what struck me as like wild. When I saw that Facebook post, I was like, wait, is this actually Poppy Playtime, or no? This is like YouTube people using Poppy Playtime.
Getting into the whole Elsa Spider-Man nonsense, that the dark side of like YouTube, like bot farms and stuff like that, that create these weird like procedurally generated, but it's just like just garbage stuff that children will click on. And yeah, there's probably a lot of fan videos and stuff about Poppy Playtime and stuff, because that's the thing, but I don't understand why the police need to be involved with this as far as like warning people.
In true video game fashion, or I'm sorry, in true Facebook fashion, can I go to this comment here?
Yes.
First of all, the LCSD should be ashamed of itself for this fear-mongering anti-video game post. Not all video games are for kids. Those still stuck in the video games are toys for children mindset have no one to blame but themselves if their children are exposed to content they deem inappropriate. 59 replies, and I hesitate to think what
they're all going to be positive. Anyway, I'm sure.
Parents, watch what your kids are consuming. That's the bottom line here, right? All right.
Yeah.
Sorry, I had to bring that up. I just, when I saw that on Facebook, I was like, what has this world come
to? Then I hope their kids get taken to the movies to go see Poppy Playtime, the wonderful, like, it's like the Muppets.
SSG100 Matt says, oh God, reading the comments live. Yeah, sometimes. What does this show become? Oh, I'm sure the movie can be rated R and kids will still show up anyway. Come on, you go to any R-rated movie these days. You go to Mortal Kombat in the theaters and people are like, oh, whatever, I'm taking my kid because, you know, it's a video game.
I saw a video online about this theater chain that literally has, and I'm assuming these are special theaters for, like, kids' movies and stuff, but they literally have, like, one of those play structures in the movie theater itself. It's like a McDonald's, you know, play structure thing with, like, movies and, like, actual kids' movies and stuff.
Tell me so where I'm bored, never going without telling me where I'm never going.
I mean, I'm assuming it's for, like, special, like, kids' movies only. But it'd be funny, though. They play Poppy Playtime in that.
I prefer the reverse of that. Like, I don't know if they still do this, but the Kabuki Theater in San Francisco has several screens where, since they sell alcohol, it's 21 and up only. That is my favorite place to see a movie.
Yeah, that's I think they do that over here locally at our they call it the Palladio Lux thing, but they do have, certain screen times where it, I mean, they serve alcohol all the time, but they have, do have certain things. It's a separate theater. It's like right around the corner of the regular Palladio, but those are the ones where you have, like, the fancy, like, you can order food and alcohol and stuff if you want. And they have a bar, but
SSJ100 yeah. Matt says, I snuck into Barbed Wire when I was 13. Wasn't that Pamela Anderson movie?
That movie was terrible.
Yeah, but you know what? there's a lot in that movie for a 13-year-old boy.
True.
At least, y'all, maybe not all boys, because I don't think that movie did anything for me. But some of y'all, I'm sure, really enjoyed that film, despite the fact it was terrible. All right. Anyhow, let's move on. Loki, why don't you tell us the most unsurprising news of the year?
There's going to be a new Call of Duty. What? Activision making the game that makes the money. What? So shocking. So they've announced that the new game they're putting out is Modern Warfare 2. And you may be thinking, well, wait a second there. I swear I remember there being a Modern Warfare 2 before. In fact, I'm pretty sure there's a Modern Warfare 3. Well, this is the new Modern Warfare 2. Which is actually like Call of Duty 17 or something like that. I'm not really sure what number that they're on now. But yeah, they're doing it's the sequel to the Modern Warfare 1 reboot thing. So it's a reboot sequel. Yeah, number 10 in the Modern Warfare series.
Do you own them all, Loki?
I own like the first three?
Dark to
see- well, because technically, like, there's 1, 2, and 3, and then Reflex was on the Wii, I think, and then there's mobile games, there's the remasters, I don't have the remasters, and then I don't have the new, I may have the new Modern Warfare, because that may have been a PlayStation Plus title at one time. I may actually own all of them, I don't know, except for the mobile and the Wii version. I wouldn't buy the Wii version.
Dark Tetsuya in chat says, maybe they should just put the year on it like Madden does. Call of Duty 22. Would you play that?
I like the Modern Warfare games, honestly. I don't know how the last reboot thing was, but like the first three Modern Warfare games were pretty good. I really like the first three ones, but that's Activision of like the way past when it wasn't super terrible. Like the games are good and they didn't have all the loot boxes and stuff, but we're never going back to those days again, unfortunately.
E3VL in chat says, can't put the year. They'll think it's based on Ukraine-Russia war. Oof. But, I mean, kind of true. I mean,
yeah,
there are people that have those types of conclusions.
And then there's another fun thing. So with Call of Duty Vanguard, they've added a new anti-cheat tool that now allows them to basically detect when they're doing the cheating. And they have a new mitigation technique called cloaking that will make everybody but the cheater invisible. So if they catch you wall hacking, you're going to be wall hacking ghosts, I guess.
The ways they trap and screw over cheaters, well, I mean, I wouldn't call it screwing over cheaters because cheaters deserve it, but you know, the pranks, I don't know, the punks they're playing on cheaters are getting funnier and funnier. Devs are getting more and more clever with how they do that. I always like the cheater island where you just put the cheater in games with other cheaters and let them.
Yeah, that was themselves to Grand Theft Auto Online. They used to do that, and people just didn't really care. They're like, oh, well, you know.
Oh, well, right.
That's. And a lot of times you get put there for like stupid things.
I think some people like being on Cheater Island, quite frankly. So
Yeah. So, well, you know, this is it's not that ridiculous. You know, at least they're doing something. Unlike, you know, what they're doing with what Blizzard's doing with Overwatch 2, which is basically nothing.
Well, moving on to another story is that there's now 91 games that you can no longer play online. Now, I do want to make sure there's kind of two important parts to this story, because one of the headlines that's going around is that Ubisoft is going to be shutting down services for 91 games. But here's what's actually happened is that there was a blog post with a timestamp that was wrong on it that said there's a list of 91 games have now been shut down. So it made it look like all these games were shut down at once. But Ubisoft actually apologized for the confusion, saying these are games that have all ended online services over the last year. So it is not 91 games that they shut down all at once. These are 91 games that have been actually shut down over the last year. Most people probably
that's
just haven't
still a lot.
Talked about it. Yeah, it's a lot. But most people probably haven't talked about it because most people probably didn't even notice. I mean, there's games that are on this list that are on the Xbox 360, Far Cry Blood Dragon on PS3, Xbox 360, and PC, no longer playable online. But there's games on here for the Wii. How about Just Dance 3 Kids? I know I'm sure you're all beat up about that, but Just Dance 3 Kids is no longer playable online. But there are some relatively newer games, like that Far Cry Blood Dragon was released in 2020, I think, right?
That game was awesome.
Yeah, so...
No, Blood Dragon was not released in 2020.
No, I'm sorry, you're right, I'm mixing it up. That's the date that it was actually retired.
Yeah, Blood Dragon came out a while ago, but that game is fantastic. Yeah. That is like one of the best spin-offs of Far Cry game ever.
Yeah. I'm trying to see some games in here that are definitely taken down a bit more recently. Rainbow Six Vegas 2, Rainbow Six Vegas, Rainbow Six Lockdown. So anyway, it's just part of the natural ebb and flow of the cycle of video games is that online servers, they get shut down, especially if no one's on there playing them. So perhaps we need to go back to a simpler time when there were no video games servers online, so you could just keep playing games forever. So let's get to this segment.
And now it's time to travel back to a simpler time, where I'll dive into the vault and pull out a classic and tell you about it. It's time for the classic game of the week.
Well, and as we discussed earlier in the show, Dark Sakura is not here tonight, so I'm picking tonight's classic game, which I have picked Ultima... And I'm sorry, Loki, I would have let you pick this time, but I didn't have a lot of notice, so I just had to throw something together.
Don't worry about it.
So I had to think, like, all right, what haven't I done yet that's a game that I have a lot of feelings? I could just talk about this game very easily for a little bit. And I came up on Ultima 4, Quest of the Avatar. So I've talked a little bit about Ultima 3, I think, you know, years ago. I picked that as a classic game. But I want to talk a little bit about Ultima 4, because Ultima 4... is like the whole Ultima series in general is really an RPG series that gave us a lot that it often doesn't get credited enough for. Because Ultima 4, I mean, and the original Ultima series was, of course, by Richard Garriott, Lord British, on the PC and DOS-based systems. Apple, I think, may have been where those games first started. They got ported everywhere. But a lot of modern RPGs have a lot from Ultima to thank. And you'll notice that I'm actually playing Ultima 4, the video here tonight, and the music I think you're hearing on stream, I think it's coming through, is coming from the NES version of the game, because this is where I remember playing Ultima 4 for the first time. It might surprise you, I did not play this on the Commodore 64 at first or any of that stuff, but I actually originally played this on the NES. I want to show you real quick, pardon the live screenshot switching here, but I want to show you real quick what this looks like on the PC because it was a very, very different looking game on the PC. You know, this, it looked a lot more like a traditional role-playing game might look, where you're actually having to input things and try to get, you know, the characters to interact with you by typing things. You actually see your character moving north, south, east, and west. But a lot of this was changed for the NES. So it's just interesting that it is the same game, essentially. But they did a lot to really streamline a lot of the stuff that might feel a little bit micromanage-y in the game otherwise. So let me flip back here. I'm going to flip back to the NES version because, quite honestly, I think it has a better soundtrack. Oops. Oh, sorry. Now I'm overlaying both games. That's what happens when I have to do it all myself live. Okay. Let's get into the weeds a little more on Ultima 4. It was released in 1985, originally for the Apple II. It's considered part of the Age of Enlightenment trilogy. So the interesting thing about Ultima 4, it's the first RPG in quite some time. You're not trying to overcome a tangible ultimate evil. You're not trying to beat chaos. You're not trying to defeat Lord Evil Doer. You know, this is a very different setup in this game. So basically the way this is all put together is that the Triad of Evil from the previous Ultima games changed the world of Sosaria. So some of the world disappeared, there were new continents. It's just basically a way for them to come up with a new map for Sosaria, basically. Lord British, who, you know, is kind of tongue-in-cheek a representation of Richard Garriott in the games, but he's the actual lord over Britannia, he felt that people lacked purpose after the struggles against the Triad were over, and he was concerned with spiritual well-being. So he proclaimed the quest of the Avatar. He needed someone to come forward and be the shining example for others to follow. And that's what this game is your ultimate quest of enlightenment, the quest of the Avatar. So you don't really, like, you're not against, like, oh, we've got this big bad we've got to do. So that's kind of interesting, I think. Also, in the beginning of the game, and a lot of people know this from the beginning of the game, you're asked a series of questions that ultimately determine how your principles of truth, love, and courage come together to choose what you're going to play in the game. I'm going to rewind the stream here a little bit so you can see it again. But this first section of the game is actually asking you questions about how you would respond in certain scenarios that ultimately determine the class that you're going to play. So, for example, we're going to... let me get the next question here. Fight again... Oh, sorry, this person's speed running it, so it's like flying by. Let me try to get one of these questions. Listen carefully. Entrusted to deliver an uncounted purse of gold, thou dost meet a poor beggar. Dost thou deliver the gold, knowing the trust in thee was well placed, or show compassion, giving the beggar a coin, knowing it shan't be missed? So you're basically taking a personality quest at the beginning of the game. And so in this scenario, do you A, honestly give the money back, or B, show compassion and give the beggar a coin? So based on your answer here, you're going to tilt the scales to either A, honesty, truth, which is a mage. It's embodied by the mage in the game, which is pure truth, honesty. Or compassion is pure love, and that is embodied by a bard. So the way you answer these questions, and so the person runs through all these questions here in the intro, and I think they ultimately land on a druid, if I saw that play by quick here. So this person landed on truth and love, or justice, coming together. So you can actually have, and there are eight classes. So truth is a mage, love is a bard, courage is a fighter, truth and love is a druid, love and courage is a tinkerer, truth and courage is a paladin, truth, love, and courage is considered spirituality, and that is a ranger. Or you can actually take a challenge in the game and play none, a character with humility, one that has neither truth, love, nor courage, and that is a shepherd. Now, the classes that you don't end up picking end up being NPCs in the game. So if I fast forward in the footage here a little more, you'll notice that our druid has put together a party here where it looks like I think they have the fighter, and I think that's the ranger that they've put together in their party there. So those characters exist as NPCs, and you put together a party of four people by going around the world and completing quests and putting your party together to, you know, help you on your quest to become the avatar. So I think it's really neat. Like, it's just kind of a neat way of building the game. Like, asking, like, you know, your character being reflected by a personality quest or a personality test, I think is really neat. And just how it impacts the ultimate game and potentially its difficulty. So, how did this game come about? Well, Richard Garriott got no feedback because California Pacific Computer and Sierra Online never forwarded him mail. So he finally realized from letters from enraged parents that in the earlier games, doing immoral actions like stealing and murdering peaceful citizens might be things that people would find objectionable. So Richard Garriott took on the task of wanting to be a good storyteller, but a story that has content, and realized that 90% of games out there were just go kill the bad guy. So Ultima 4 ended up being a game about ethical overtones and ended up being a better told story. In his official biography, it was said he decided that if people were going to look for hidden meaning in his work when they didn't even exist, he would introduce ideas and symbols with meaning and significance he deemed worthwhile to give them something they could really think about. So the way this is all set up with the personality test and everything, you're supposed to imagine that you're playing yourself in the fantasy realm and not a separate person. And that was kind of something a little unique for this game at the time as well. And he removed elements like playing a non-human because he worried that this would prevent players from identifying personally with their character. So I think that's very, very interesting. The Ankh is oftentimes used as the symbol of the avatar. And Richard Garriott saw this originally in the film Logan's Run and decided to use this in his game. And that Ankh kind of became a symbol for Ultima later on. This game came out on the Apple II, the Commodore 64, Atari 8-bit platforms, a PC DOS version, the Amiga and the Atari ST, the NES. It was on the Sega Master System, actually. I always forget that. The Ultima 4 was on the Sega Master System. And I think, if I remember right, I'm doing this live, but sometimes I do it that way. I want to say that the Sega Masters, okay, we're going to look at somebody who's actually speedrunning the game. I want to say, yeah, it looked more like the PC version. It didn't look like the NES version. The NES version was like done with completely redone graphics and things like that. And I want to say the same team that did Ultima 3 did that. But it's interesting to see Ultima 4, I think, on a console, but more like the PC version. I don't know, kind of interesting. Anyway, the reception for this game, believe it or not, and it's interesting because ZenMonkey11 in chat says this game seems confusing. I think it is. It may not have held up well over time because games have generally gotten easier and so forth, just in that, you know, you don't have to manually type to a character what you want to do anymore. But what this game did for the genre, people consider this one of the best games ever made, if you can believe it. And I do. I think, you know, a lot of times games like Final Fantasy, Dragon Quest get credited for the genre, but I think Ultima 4 especially did a ton of stuff for the role-playing genre. And I think there's a lot that we see in games today, especially things like, I would say, the Elder Scrolls series, which also lets you kind of embody yourself in the main character, that has Ultima 4 to thank for it. Computer Gaming World named Ultima 4 as the game of the year in 1986. Dragon Magazine called Ultima 4 the most impressive and complex adventure to date. The Famitsu reviewed the Famicom version of the game and only gave it a 31, but the Sega Master System of the game got an 89% in computer and video games. The co-creator of D&D, Dave Arnson, said in 1988, Ultima 4 and a few other games have stood pretty much alone as quirks instead of trendsetters in the computer RPG industry, as other games did not follow their innovations. And I think there was another one here. In 1996, Computer Gaming World named this game the second best video game of all time. So Interesting. I'm sorry, did I not say Famitsu out of 40? Yeah, 31 out of 40. I'm sorry if I was reading fast and trying to multitask here, so lots going on. But anyway, that's a little insight to Ultima 4, Quest of the Avatar. And I know I played this game quite a bit. It was a hard game. The battle systems I found to be kind of hard. I would really like to go back and revisit this game someday as, like, not a kid, because I bet there would be more in the game I would understand that maybe I didn't understand as well before when I first played this game. But yeah, I think this game is really, it was really transformative for RPGs, especially on these shores, and deserves a lot of credit. Questbuster in chat says Ultima 4 was big for a number of reasons, but probably it was because of its focus on self-improvement as opposed to just go kill the big evil that really shook things up, as Rob pointed out. Well, thank you. And there it is, your classic game of the week, Ultima 4, Quest of the Avatar. Nice. All right. You ever played that game, Loki?
I have not. I actually don't think I've really played any of the Ultima games, except for briefly Ultima Online was at a friend's house, and we were just being obnoxious children.
Yeah. There's nine games. Well, if you don't count online, there's nine games in the Ultima series, if I remember right. Because, what, Pagan was eight, and then I think there was one after that. So, and they're basically, they are a trilogy of trilogies. And as I kind of referenced there, one, two, and three were its own trilogy where it is, go beat the bad guy. But then four, five, and six kind of started this Journey of Enlightenment sort of series. And then seven, eight, nine, I don't remember exactly. I kind of lost track of the series at that point, but they were their own trilogy of things. So, yeah. Anyway, it's really a game worth visiting. And I think especially the NES versions of the Ultima games are really overlooked by time, because they are so radically different from the computer versions, which are the ones that are credited for being so revolutionary. But, like, the soundtracks to both those games, too, are really good. I talk about Ultima 3 a lot. I remember the music in Ultima 3 very well. It is such a good soundtrack. But those games haven't really held up in gaming, you know, people's memory quite as well. I would love to see those games in a compilation someday. Those are the games for me I would love to see on the Switch Online. But I realize the rights issues get complicated and so forth. They got to convince Richard Garriott it's a good idea, I suppose. So.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. Let's check out some other headlines in a segment we call Rapid Fire News. And you got a few things tonight for us, Loki.
Yeah. So Bethesda, because, you know, they are getting rid of their dedicated launcher, they are going to be putting their games on Steam. And so as part of that, they have added five of their classic games to Steam, and some of which are actually free at the moment. So Elder Scrolls, you get the Elder Scrolls Arena, Elder Scrolls 2 Daggerfall, The Elder Scrolls Adventures Redguard, and Elder Scrolls Legend Battlespire and Wolfenstein Enemy Territory. Elder Scrolls Arena and Daggerfall are free, and also apparently Wolfenstein Enemy Territory is $0 right now. I'm not sure that's going to stay that way, but
yeah, I grabbed the two Elders. I forgot about the Wolfenstein game, so I got to go grab that too. But the two, yeah, I grabbed those today. And just a reminder, you can now transfer your Bethesda launcher titles over to Steam. When this was first reported on a couple months ago, that wasn't available yet, but that is available now. And so I actually had all three Quake games because Bethesda gave them away for free if you downloaded the launcher during like QuakeCon at some point. So now I have all those games on Steam. So just kind of fun. So you can transfer that all over today. It's pretty easy. You just link your Bethesda account to your Steam account and then you push a button and wait, basically. So
yeah, I gotta go do that.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, I don't think you can ever not do it, but you might have a lapse when the Bethesda launcher goes away to play the game if you don't go move them over. So you might as well go ahead and do it and grab the free games while you're at it. They're free.
Sure. The Super Mario Brothers animated movie, which is supposed to come to theaters this Christmas, is now going to be delayed to April 2023. So that was put out by a tweet from Nintendo, or I guess Miyamoto, because it says this is Miyamoto. But yes, it's now been delayed to April 7th and April 28th in Japan. So, oh well, we'll just wait longer, I guess.
All right, whatever.
Yep.
Fifth Dream in chat says Christmas canceled by Nintendo. You know what though? Here's something to consider. The theme park at Universal Studios Hollywood is going to open around that same time frame. It's not opening this holiday. It's opening spring 2023.
Maybe. Apparently, BBC Proms is celebrating classical and orchestral music every year. They have live concerts, and they're going to be showcasing, for the first time, video game music this summer. So on August 1st, they're going to have Gaming Prom from 8-bit to Infinity, which will be performed at the Royal Albert Hall in London and conducted by Robert Ames.
That's awesome. So Jason referenced that in the intro a little bit. And I hope there's a way for us to watch it over here, that, you know, the content gets on YouTube and isn't region locked or something. I'd love to see it. I think it'd be pretty great. You know, just coming off a couple of weeks ago, seeing the San Francisco Symphony doing the Dear Friends, but the other Final Fantasy concert, whatever they're calling it now, Distant Worlds. That was it. It's great to see the symphonies performing the video game music. It's, again, it's art. It's a part of our culture. It's what we've grown up on. So,
yeah. Cool. And then if you are interested in getting some more Animal Crossing music, Animal Crossing New Horizons has the original soundtrack 2 coming out on CD here. Also, there is going to be a KK Slider vinyl album that's been released or revealed, I guess. The soundtrack 2 is set to release in Japan June 22nd and priced at 7,480 yen, and apparently includes 140 tracks across 5 CDs. And then, of course, the vinyl album, which is supposed to be released November 23rd and priced at 4,620 yen and has 19 songs in all. So 18 KK Slider music instrumental collection and one bonus track.
I wonder if Dark Sakura, I know she loves her KK Slider songs. I wonder if she's going to get that vinyl. Seems like something is up her
alley.
I'll have to ask her next week.
All right. Yeah.
Well, now let's see what else we can buy this week as we travel around the world and check out some release dates. So Loki, what's coming out in the U.S. this week?
In the U.S., we have Citizen Sleeper on PC, Nintendo Switch, Xbox One, and Xbox Series. Trek the Yomi on PC, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series. And honestly, that's it. Sure.
Well, probably part of the reason it's quiet over here is that it's very quiet over in Japan this week because, if I'm not mistaken, it's Golden Week in Japan, because I've seen some of the sales starting on the stores in honor of Golden Week. And looking at the release dates, there is nothing. There's some accessories coming out this week. We don't really talk about those a lot. There are no games coming out this week in Japan. We don't really get to anything until May 12th on the Switch. When Dead by Daylight gets a release in Japan on the Switch, I think it's a new compilation on the 12th. But as far as this week goes, nothing in Japan. So play what you already got. Get caught up in your backlog. How about the UK, Loki? I imagine it's pretty slow
there,
too.
The UK, they're just getting Sifu on PlayStation. So.
All right. So a holiday week in Japan kind of slows down the gaming industry around the world, but it's understandable, especially with a lot of games. Well, a lot of games released worldwide, too.
Yeah. April, May is usually pretty dead anyway, so it's not a surprise.
It is. Just because at this point, companies are going to hold their games until school's out. And we have more time to play through games.
So, typically a lot of the stuff gets held until... it used to be like June would be kind of a little bit of a release window. And then dead for July, for sure. July is like an absolute dead month. August is kind of like, let's jump into the fourth quarter in the third quarter. And then it just ramps up from there until December.
All right. We have a few more stories for you, and then we're going to take your calls and your emails and your other participation in our listener roundtable. If you want to give us a call, join our Discord. You can also talk with us throughout the week on Discord over at vognetwork.com. That's vognetwork.com/Discord. If you want to call into the show, you want to head on over to the green room, and we will be pulling people in. But we'll get to that a little later. For now, we have some headlines. Loki.
Yeah, let's talk about Twitch. So Twitch is looking to make some more money because apparently they are not making enough money. So they are considering some major changes to their monetization practices, none of which actually benefit the streamers, unfortunately. So right now, Twitch is looking to propose a cut to I guess, certain partnered streamers from, normally, I guess they get 70% of the revenue from Twitch subscriptions. Mm-hmm. It's going to be dropped down to 50%.
Which is what affiliates make, yeah.
Which is what affiliates make. Also, they're going to be doing some things to, I don't know if it's incentivize more ads to be played. Not really sure what that necessarily means. And they're going to have a new tier system for partnered streamers as well. I don't know. A lot of this stuff is contractual stuff that I don't have anything to really do. Yeah, so incentives for more ads, no more exclusivity, which I guess is all right. So no longer will they force you to only stream on Twitch. You can actually stream on other platforms.
Because Twitch has no way to enforce that. Like, let's be real. There are a lot of affiliates. We're very good, you know, folks here at Vogue, where we don't, you know, put this show up on YouTube immediately after it's broadcast here on Twitch. But there's a lot of people that do things like that. And they're just like, well, you know, it's Twitch isn't going to find out. And Twitch never does find out. But technically, you are in violation of your contract. So maybe, you know, Twitch realizes they can't enforce this. So why not make it a perk?
Yeah, so I don't know. It kind of sucks that they're going to be doing a lot of this stuff. And of course, it's not been taken positive at all by anybody, I think.
It's because it's literally taking away people's income. But,
you know, what are you going to do? Because it's, you know,
something's got to give. If Twitch doesn't make money, then the platform disappears and then people are up shit creek.
Yes, because Amazon doesn't make enough money.
My advice to full-time streamers is you better have a plan for if Twitch closes tomorrow. Like, that's my honest advice. You better have a plan for if Twitch closes tomorrow. What are you going to do? I don't even know here at Vogue Network what we do. I have an idea what we do. But, you know, there's pretty easy. You just do it on YouTube. Or you could always go back to doing it on Shoutcast. So, but yeah. I don't know. We don't really have an answer yet, but you need to, you know, but we also don't make a lot of money off this. We don't make, in fact, we doesn't really pay any of our personal bills. We don't make any money personally from this. It pays for Vogue to be a legitimate business, and it pays for once in a while, some nice sponsorships and conventions and things like that. So, yeah. Anyway, so I, you know, Twitch is obviously in the situation where they're not making as much money as Amazon, the big Amazon, feels like they should. And it's leading to this tricky situation, I suppose. So,
yeah.
We'll see. All right. I would think they're going to start to gate up how long it takes to get to affiliate. That's my honest advice. If you think you might want to become a Twitch affiliate at some point, I would really encourage you to start that process sooner rather than later.
But let's be honest though, like there's nothing stopping them from taking affiliate status away from you.
There really isn't. Look at YouTube.
I mean, YouTube, I used to be able to make ad money off of like my channel, and now it's like, no.
Yeah, no, totally fair point. So we'll see what happens. All right, moving on. Next story, also Loki.
Yes, Disney is, or I should say Gameloft, is releasing a new Disney game called Disney Dreamlight Valley, which looks kind of like a cross between Animal Crossing and, say, like The Sims, with like a bunch of Disney stuff thrown in. It is a free-to-play game that is going to be on console and PC, and it'll be launching in 2023. It looks all right. I know there's some people that probably be into this, but I get really wary when it's a Gameloft title, and I could just see monetization out the ass for this.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like it has the potential to be really good. There's a lot of good things in that formula, but it's one of those we really can't pass judgment on it until we can actually play it, because it's one of those things that could go many directions. It could really be surprising. It could really be a cash cow that just, you know, leaves cow patties everywhere. So we'll see.
Yeah. It looks neat, though, as long as it's not ruined.
Yeah, the concept's awesome.
I would prefer this was more like a Disney Infinity type game. That's almost kind of the vibe I got from some of that stuff. But it's a free-to-play game. Like, just make a console game. Why is it so hard that we can't just, like honestly, like, imagine, like, if they made just, like, an Animal Crossing game. Just, like, they can even sell DLC for, like, different things. Like, oh, hey, you want, like, you know, the Nightmare Before Christmas stuff? Now we'll sell you a Nightmare Before Christmas thing. And they could, like, piecemeal it out that way instead of it being free. I just don't know. Whatever.
SG100 Matt in chat over twitch.tv/VogNetwork says, serious Disney fans are a different breed and will either love this or be shit on. Yes. Very that. Another story next, also from Loki.
So Bungie has unfortunately kind of received a little bit of a loss when it came to going after cheat sellers. For Destiny 2, they apparently were going after the website Aim Junkies, saying that they were in violation of copyright infringement, but apparently the judge did not feel that way, so they have dismissed the claims for the copyright, trademark related claims. They've dismissed that. They said that the non-trademark related claims should skip the court and be resolved via arbitration. But apparently, though, the Aim Junkies, I guess, and they have the legal team, have dismissed the copyright infringement claims, saying that, you know, they haven't actually copied anything because they're kind of just like circumventing their cheat software or something like that. So that mean that makes sense that they wouldn't get him on that, but I still think in the end they're probably, you know, Bungie's got a lot more money when it comes to lawyers, I would think. So they're probably gonna end up getting him on other stuff.
We'll just see what happens on appeal, because that's how these things always go, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. All right, stay tuned. Something else you might want to stay tuned for if you're a Roblox player is a performance from Lizzo, who's pretty amazing and has a new album coming out. Lizzo's going to be doing a concert in the metaverse on April 30th. And this is no disrespect to Lizzo. She's great. But this whole thing is being hyped up as like, oh, it's a concert in the metaverse. Hasn't Fortnite been doing concerts? I mean, I know Fortnite isn't technically the metaverse, but isn't it kind of like that? I don't get it.
They've already done concerts before in Roblox, too, I want to say.
Yeah, it's weird. Anyway, Logitech is doing... Oh, maybe this is it. Logitech says it's the first music award show in the metaverse. It's the Songbreaker Awards, and Lizzo will be doing her first virtual performance in this music award show.
Calling it the metaverse. Jesus Christ. It's just a game.
Just call it VR chat. That's what it is.
It's like oh, let's use the buzzword, the blockchain, metaverse, pay us give us money
NFTs,
now, speculative money. I'm going to tell you this much, you know, you can throw out the word metaverse all you want for Roblox, but like their stock prices aren't doing as good as they used to. Like that stuff that launched at like $80 a share and it's down to like 50, I think. So, you ain't selling anybody on the metaverse stuff.
Questbuster says Hatsune Miku concerts have been a thing in PlayStation Home Japan. That's pretty cool. No, it's Zen Monkey. It's not in VR chat. It's in Roblox. I was just calling it VR chat because that's what the metaverse is. The metaverse is just VR chat under a different name. That's all it is.
It's a really bad buzzword that they're going to beat it to death. Like, it's just like, I'm so sick of hearing about metaverse. Like, it's just, it's so dumb.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it for the stories that we had on deck for tonight. So we invite you to give us a call if you'd like over in our green room over at vognetwork.com/discord. We also have our mailbag, which I will get to here in a moment. While I open up the mailbag, Loki, is there any other headlines we missed tonight that you want to talk about?
Not really.
All right, that's all right. We have one email, so we have something for tonight. We have an email. YYR has been emailing us a lot, but I surely don't mind. I always enjoy hearing from YYR. So we have this email tonight from YYR saying, hello, LR. Just a note on something you mentioned in last week's episode. Sonic Origins will be releasing this month. However, if all you want are the original games at a reasonable price without the scummy DLC, You should know that the original Xbox 360 versions of Sonic 1, 2, 3, and Knuckles, as well as Sonic CD, are still currently available for $5 each via backwards compatibility on Xbox One and Series consoles. And if you buy Sonic and Knuckles, you can use the lock-on feature with any of Sonic 1 through 3 if you also purchase those. However, if this sounds like a good alternative to you, you probably shouldn't wait too long to jump on it. This may have been mentioned during the show already. No, I was saving it for this, actually. I read ahead tonight. But all of those titles are about to be delisted on May 20th. Just saying. It just really irritates me that they want to charge so much for these games now, especially considering that they're also adding the sorts of things we used to get for free in these collections as paid DLC. Just stop. Anyway, thanks again for the show and enjoy your week. Happy to save a buck here and there, Aaron or YYR. And I'm going to add a PS that he didn't write, but I'm putting it there. PS, buy Falling Plus on Xbox now. It's available. Oh, I got the number one score in Falling Plus. I haven't checked to see if it's still there. If anyone dethroned me, it was SSG100 Matt. But I got the number one score in Falling Plus at some point. Oh, do you take it back? All right, Matt took it back. I just haven't logged in to look at it. So I guess I got to play again. But yeah, so check out Falling Plus on Xbox if you want to get in our pissing match over a high score in that game. But that's been fun. Bobby Blackwolf in chat says, I had it. You did. You had it for a moment. SG100 Matt says, buy the game and dethrone me, please. Yes, dethrone us both. So anyway, back to the point in Aaron's email about the games being delisted. Yeah, they never did put them out. Like, I would have thought for sure there was a compilation on CD, but I guess, or DVD or whatever, of those Sonic games. I guess there wasn't, but what is that called? I'm looking up right now. Was it the Sonic Mega Collection? Well, there's that. That's available on GameCube, and that has everything. But what was the Mega Genesis?
Yeah, it was something like something Genesis Collection. I don't remember what it was called.
Sorry for the silence, but I'm trying to remember what this was called.
Like Ultimate Genesis or Sonic and
Sega. It's just called the Sega Genesis Collection. Okay, that's what I'm looking for. Or Sega Genesis Classics. So let me look. Sega Genesis Classics PS4 game list. So if you pick up the Sega Genesis Classics on PS4, it has Sonic and Sonic 2. It just doesn't have Sonic 3. But it has 3D Blast and Spinball in it as well. So, and I think that I remember it coming up that maybe the music with Sonic 3 has been an issue in the past. But yeah. So anyway, also pointing out the Sonic Ultimate Genesis Collection didn't have the lock-on feature. Oh, is that the one on PS3? Sorry, I'm looking up things live as we're going. Okay, yeah. The Sonic Ultimate Genesis Collection was the one that was on PS3 and Xbox 360. And that has 1, 2, and 3. And it has Sonic and Knuckles. So I bet you could find that game used pretty cheap right now until people realize its true value, that it has all those Sonic games in it. I think I have this on PlayStation 3 hanging out around somewhere. It's a bummer I can't fucking play PlayStation 3 games on my PS4 or PlayStation 5. So.
I mean, you can play some of them, but you have to buy them again.
Well, and this one won't be one that you can buy again, I guarantee it. Why would Sega put that out when they've got this other Sonic thing they want people to buy now?
Mm-hmm.
So I would exactly. Really, the Xbox 360 version of this is really the must-have thing, I would say. Oh, Dijorama S says, you got a PS5? No, not yet. I'm speaking out of turn a little bit. It's just that with Final Fantasy 16 likely releasing in the next year, it's going to happen. It's just a matter of, you know, when I finally call Shane and say, Shane, I need you to work your Target inventory magic and make me get a PS5. So. Oh, Bobby Blackwell says it's not backwards compatible on Xbox One. Oh, sneaky, sneaky. So you really just have to have a 360 to play this. Interesting. Greedy.
Darn, I guess I'll just
Really worth that much? And why no Sonic 4? As if I had to ask.
That wasn't good.
But why no Sonic 4? Then why not just throw it in? Anyway. All right. That is going to do it for another episode of Orange Lounge Radio. Thank you so much for tuning into our show and supporting the show. Whether you were here live over at twitch.tv/Evogue Network on Sunday night, or you were listening on our podcast feed throughout the week, thank you so much for supporting our show. As Joan Hermat says, the Sonic 4 is a DLC that's going to be another $30. Yeah. And DJ Roma S says retail stores can get them in stock for 24 hours now. Yeah, I think we've heard rumblings that the chip shortage is on its way out. And just most people who wanted a PS5 that badly have finally gotten one by now. So it's, you know, just don't support the resellers. That's the most important thing. Anyway, where was I? Yes, if you enjoyed the show, help us spread the word. We are the show where every gamer has a voice, but we need more voices here to put out on air. A nice 5-star review on a site like iTunes or Spotify or Google, whatever, wherever you found this podcast, give it a rating and a nice review. Believe me, it goes a long way. I don't think anyone's written an iTunes review for the show in like 3 years. So if you haven't written one yet, we'd really appreciate it. Thank you. That's all I can think of. Join our discussions throughout the week at vognetwork.com/discord. I guess that's it. That's all I've got to say. Let's go around and get final thoughts. Loki, what's your final thought for this week?
I got to go play more Minecraft. I'll try to play something else, too.
200,000 blocks, you amateur. Go for 300,000 next time.
I know.
Prove your love of Minecraft, because I'm doubting you right now.
You're right. I gotta prove everybody.
My final thought. I'll just give a cheap plug to my personal Twitch channel over at Rob Roberts, because we've had some fun Final Fantasy 14 streams. I've almost hit 2 of the 3 criteria to be a partner. If I stream tomorrow, which I probably will, unless I have an IRL thing come up, I will have the 25 hours and I will have the whatever it is, however many streams you need in a month, 12 or something like that. I will have both of those. I just won't have the 75 average viewers. I'm a little ways away from that. But hey, every view counts. Thank you over at twitch.tv/Rob Roberts, my personal channel. And of course, twitch.tv/Vogue Network is where you can find us live on Sunday nights. And I see that we just got a hype train here at the end of the show. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I'll give you all your credits here after the credits. But let's get to those credits. We'll see you in 7 days. Hopefully the gang's all back together next week, because it will literally have been a month. But we're excited to have Dark Soccer, Loki, and myself all together again in a week. Have a great night, everybody. We'll see you next time. Good night.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for our live show, tune in to VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio nor Vogue Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.